Yes, we're in chapter Lamed Ches. We're in the middle of the story with Yehuda and Tamar. So we'll start. Let's start Pasuk Yud Ches. Page 210.
Tamar robbed him of everything he had.
Yeah. Okay, basically, Yehuda... Tamar is upset that Yehuda didn't give it to the third son, Sheila. So she got dressed up like a zona, like a prostitute. She was standing in the path. Yehuda came to her, and as we discussed the whole story at great length last time, how it happened, Hashem wanted it to happen, Hashem made it happen. And before Matan Torah, it wasn't really forbidden. So she said to him, she said to him, what are you going to give me? And as the commentators explained, and like we discussed, it wasn't that she wanted money. She wanted proof to show Yehuda that you were the one that did it to me. Because she didn't want the money. So she says, what are you going to give me? So he said, I'll send you a goat from the flock. So she said to him now, so she said, give me a collateral. Give me security until you send me the goat. But Yehuda, so he said, Pasuk Yud Ches, what security do you want me to give you? Vatayma, so she said to him, your signet ring, your wrap, and the stick that you have in your hand, all these types of things, I want Vayitana, give it to me as collateral. Now the Mefarshim explained, this is a very interesting thing, it was the stick that Moshe Rabbeinu used, and the Yaakov Avinu stick, this is a very special staff that he gave her. But this is where we left off last time. So it said, Vayitani gave it to her, Vayavi Allah had relations with her, Vatar, and then she became pregnant. Even though normally a person doesn't become pregnant at the first time, nevertheless, Hashem made a miracle that she should become pregnant.
This is first time after...
Well, the question is, what?
This is the first time of wedding.
No, because according to other people, well, it's machlekes. If they actually, if she had relations with Aaron Nainan or not.
Oh.
Some people say, b'chal not. So then it was the first time anyway. But that's the whole issue, but that's not for now. So she became pregnant. She got up and she left. Okay? Meaning, what's the double expression? She got up and left. The pasuk should say she left. So it says, the Mefarshim explain that she arose spiritually. She got up to a higher level because she became pregnant with the concept of David HaMelech eventually and Mashiach eventually, so she became a much higher level. And Vayelech, and she went. Vatilbash Bilgde Amenusa, she put back on her clothing of a widow. Because now basically, as the expression goes, mission accomplished. She wanted to have children from Yehuda, right? So she thought it was going to be through the kids. It wasn't through the kids. She said, okay, I'm going straight to the source. She had relations with Yehuda. She became pregnant from Yehuda. So now her mission was accomplished. She put back on her widow clothing. She didn't care anymore. Vayishlach Yehuda. So Yehuda sent Ezgri Ho'izim the goat. Now Yehuda was an honest Jew. He promised payment. So he was going to pay it. He wanted, and also he wanted to back his security items. So he says, Yehuda sent the goat. B'yad Reyeo Adulami. Through the hand of his friend, the Dulamite. And here it doesn't say his name. Before, it says his name was Chira. Here, it doesn't say his name. It just says his friend. So Mefarshim differ from one extreme to the next, why it doesn't say his name. One reason, in Medrash, it says one reason is because to show the self-sacrifice that he had, this is a low type of a job. To go find the Zayna again and to go take back the collateral and give her a payment. I mean, it wasn't nice. Another opinion says just the opposite. He was so low, he didn't care about doing such a job.
Maybe it was the other person.
No.
There's no possibility it was the other
person. Reyeo Adulami is the same person. Why should it be somebody else? Reyeo Adulami means his friend that the Torah speaks about before. Same.
It's written the exact name in there.
The only thing the Torah did over here is left out his name. And the Medrash Taka says he left out his name for one of these two reasons. Take the security back from the woman. He didn't find her. Okay? So he wanted to do it and he didn't. So he started asking around. You know, he sees the... Now he thought the Zaina, that was her station, so to speak, where she would always be. So he says, the place, he asked the people from the place, where is this Zona, this harlot that was there on the way? They said, there was never a Kadesha here. There was never a prostitute here. They said, we don't know what you're talking about. Because, like they say, this place is a moral place. Tamar acted on the spur of the moment to become a zona, so to speak. But there was never, they said, what do you mean? There's never a zayna. There is never any type of a kadesha. And they write, there's never. Okay? And in fact, the sefer, there's a sefer, Mincha Blula, that says that they prophesied and the people didn't know what they prophesied. You have this many times in Chumash that people say things which was a prophecy and they didn't even realize that they said a prophecy. What did the people say? In this act with Yehuda was not prostitution. It wasn't in this, it wasn't Znus, it was Kedusha. It wasn't in this, even Bazeh, that's what it says, in this act there wasn't even prostitution because it was halachically, that's the way it had to be with Yehuda and Tamar. He brings on here from Reb Shmelka of Nikolsburg, one of the colleagues of the Alter Rebbe, a good friend of the Alter Rebbe. He says, Aye Kadesha, how does prostitution begin be'einayim with the eyes? In other words, like it says in the Shema, Leisasuro achli levavchem, you should not follow your heart and your eyes. And the Gemara uses the expression that the eyes and the heart are two agents of sin. The eye sees and the heart wants. Out of sight is out of mind. What you don't see, you don't want. So the Pasuk is saying, Aye Kadesha, how does this evil begin? Be'inayim with the eyes. The person should watch where they're looking.
For the tzaddikim, when it comes to making children, do they have the same instinct as our as the average human being, or is it different?
It's different.
So they don't have the same animal instinct.
Correct. They do it for the sake of the procreation. Right. Now, it's a very interesting.
They don't have any physical pleasure.
I didn't say that, but it's not the same level of animalistic pleasure that. It says the reason why Hashem made it such a pleasurable pleasure is because if it wouldn't be a pleasurable pleasure, nobody would have kids. And because...
Nobody would get married.
Right. No, so the Eibishter wants that it should be procreation of future generations, so he made the temptation strong. Now, over here, it's the first time the Torah is calling her, because the other times the Torah called her, until now the Torah is calling her Zaina, and now the Torah calls her Kadesha. Now, in Torah, later on in Chumash, when the Torah forbids prostitution, the Torah also uses the word Kadesha. As the Torah uses the word here for a prostitute, for a harlot. Now, why is a harlot called Kadesha, which is the root of the word is Kadesh, which is holy? Okay? So the explanation is that the word Kodesh, Kedusha, doesn't really mean holiness. Kedusha means separation. It's separated from everything else. That's what the word Kodesh really means. Kodesh and Muvdal, separated. Now, you have the normal path, and then you have something which is above normal, which is called holy, and something below normal, separated from the norm, for bad, is also Kadesha, prostitution. So therefore the Torah uses the same word for both Kedusha and Kadesha, prostitution, because it's a turning and a separation from the normal path. And that's why the Torah does use the word Kadesha. Okay. They said there's never been an act of znus here. There's never been a wrong act. Vayashiv al Yehuda pasik chav beis. Vayashiv al Yehuda. So the friend comes back to Yehuda. Vayayim and he says leimitzosia. I didn't find her. And not only I didn't find her, the gam anshi amokim amri. Even the people of the city said la'aisa bezer kadesha, that there wasn't. In other words, the Sipurna explains, the people were laughing at you, at the friends and at me and you, for coming and asking where the prostitute is. There was no such thing. They're making a laughing stock of you. So what did Yehuda say? Yehuda said, Tikachla, you know what? Let her keep what I gave her. Let her keep the collateral. Why? Penia lavuz, lest we will become laughing stock. Now, the Mefarshim explain two reasons why you're going to become a laughing stock.
Who's laughing?
It's laughing. Making, everybody's going to make fun of him. Now,
a fool.
Now, what's the, according to Ebenezer, what are they going to make laughing at him? Why will people laugh at him that he gave away such good collateral for a goat? It was ring and a stick and his wrap. I mean, these were expensive, not only expensive, they were prominent things. Okay? So they're going to laugh at him for that. Or, as the Abarbanel learns, people are going to make fun of him. What are you asking about Zonas for? Now, even though, like we said, even though it was permitted before Matan Torah, even though this was not a sin on Yehuda's part at all, nevertheless, it wouldn't be proper for somebody in Yehuda's stature to ask for such a thing in public. And therefore, they bring down over here the Rambam and Meir Nevuchim. The Torah teaches us a lesson.
Excuse me, but when
the... One second, let me just finish the point. And the Rambam and Meir Nevuchim explains that even sexual activities which are permitted should not be done in public. Even though, like you said, Yehuda didn't do anything wrong. Before Matan Torah, there was absolutely nothing wrong with this concept of what Yehuda did. Nevertheless, Yehuda says, you know what, let it be, let's not discuss it, I don't want to get an investigation going on, I don't want these issues to be discussed in public. So Yehuda said, I let her keep it. So the Rambam and Meir Nevuchim says, the lesson of this is, that even those things which are permissible, should not be done in public. It's not a proper place for it, so to speak, to be done in public. What?
No, two questions. One, when this Ish Abdulami went to look for this woman, nobody knew that he's looking for Yehuda. He didn't tell everybody, I'm looking for Yehuda. It was only a boost for Ish Abdulami. Yehuda's name wasn't mentioned, I believe.
Maybe he did mention the name.
I believe it's like why it's going in the...
He was looking for the one that was with Yehuda. He's looking for it.
Yeah, but he didn't tell everybody Yehuda was with her and I'm looking from her. This is a friend doesn't...
The Pashas, he was looking for her because he said, Yehuda owes her this money. Once he owed... Why should he say he did something wrong or not wrong?
Money,
or whatever?
Well, money to Zona. That's what's... It's,
no.
And the second question... you tell it's public, it's forbidden sexual relationship. Why it's forbidden not only mamash sexual relationship, but in touch and the hugging and all these things? This is from here?
It's not that it's forbidden, it's not proper. It's even hugging and things like that should not be done in public.
It's not proper, but
right.
What is the difference of the prohibition of this and this?
Technically, it wouldn't be biblically forbidden to have relations in public also. Mm-hmm. The Gemara says Rav used to whip people that did Kedushin would be in public. Mm-hmm. It's not, in other words, the lesson is just because it's allowed doesn't mean you do it in public. That's what Yehuda is basically teaching us over here. He said, let it be, let it keep the stuff, let's not make an issue of it. These issues are not to be done and discussed in public.
But this is not love.
It's not to do with love and not love. Such things are not done in public. What?
Yeah, he said that even if it was saying that it's not forbidden,
right?
It was with the Dharma, but really it was. She was supposed to be given to Sheila, not to him.
Sheila. Yeah, but I'm saying the concept of a Zayna. We're talking about the concept of a Zayna. Nobody knew at the time that it was Tomer and Yehuda. Tomer knew, but that's it. So if as Yehuda is considered Yehuda of a Zayna, so Zayna wasn't forbidden before Matan Torah.
Yeah, well, most of it's when you send it for a Haisim of Kadesha. It wasn't the...
There wasn't ever...
Meaning it was holy, it was good.
They said Nevuah that they didn't know what they said. Nobody understood what they said. They said it, but they didn't know what they said. Okay, so Yehuda basically says already, okay, let her keep it. Okay, Vayi, and it was Kim Shleish Chadashim, in when 3 months later when a pregnancy became noticeable. Now there's an interesting thing. Rashi says, what does it mean, Kim Shleish Chadashim? It doesn't say Shleish Chadashim, 3 months. So Rashi says, Kim Shleish Chadashim means almost 3 months. The majority of the first month, majority of the last month, and the middle one. Okay? Now, normally, in a full-term pregnancy of 9 months, a woman becomes a little bit noticeable after 3 months. But Tamar gave birth after 7 months.
Oh.
So a third of her pregnancy is before 3 months. That's why the pasuk says Kim Shleish Chadashim, almost 3 months. And Rashi Taka learns it wasn't 3 months completely, part of it. That's why it could be a third of her term, which would be less than 3 months. Now, at the end of the 3 months, or part of the 3 months, for Yugad the Yehuda, it was told to Yehuda, and the commentaries say, when it says by you God, it was told in a derogatory way. There's the one that told Yehuda wasn't a nice guy. He said, Zonsa Tamar Kalasecha, your daughter-in-law Tamar became pregnant, committed adultery, and she was also pregnant from this Znus. Now, there's various different opinions in the Medrash. Some people say, Vayugad Yehuda Lamer, okay, Tamar was the one that was going around boasting that she was pregnant. Some Mefoshim and the Medrash say that Tamar himself should go to the bathhouse and boast, prophets and redeemers will come for me. So Tamar actually was going around telling everybody she was pregnant. So Yehuda had understood it wasn't from Shelah, it wasn't from Aaron Einan, he didn't realize it was from himself. See, he found out that she was pregnant. But Yehme Yehuda, so Yehuda said, and as the Sipurna says, Vigam, not only did she do it, she was proud of the fact that she did it, which made it even worse.
The only question, right, is how could he go with her and not know who she was? I mean, how disguised was she?
That's what you asked before about Tzaddikim?
Yeah.
That's what it is. It says, even in the house, it says, In Yehuda's house, she was so modest. In those days, don't forget, they covered the face like they do today. But over there, today, it's only a facade. It's only a cover. Over there, it was real. They were taka modest. So Yehuda didn't know who she was before. Yehuda didn't know who his daughter-in-law was.
He didn't know her from the house.
Right.
When it was this, all these things, he didn't saw her either?
See her. He didn't see her.
He didn't see her either?
Huh? It says whatever with the voice. She came to hear the voice. It says, she, you know, whatever.
She
he didn't know.
During the to be with the Yehuda relationship, she was covered with the face too. It doesn't.
No, you know who she was before.
Yeah, before I understand.
Okay, so then he didn't know. Okay, so Vayem Yehuda. So Yehuda said, "Hey, Tziu v'sisarif, take her out and burn her." Now the Medrash says that according to Medrash Tanchuma, Yehuda made a Bezdin. Yitzchak, Yaakov, and Yehuda. Now even though they're all three relatives, obviously Yitzchak, Yaakov, and Yehuda is grandfather, father, and son, which according to any status of Halacha today would not be a kosher Bezdin, but before Matan Torah was a kosher Bezdin. So Vayema Yehuda said, Hetziu v'sisarif, take her out and burn her.
And all the tzaddikim have ruach hakodesh. Nobody knows what's going to his tamar.
Tzaddikim only have ruach hakodesh when Hashem wants them to have it. When Hashem doesn't want them to have it, they don't have it.
Okay.
Now.
Comes and goes,
isn't there?
Yeah. Now, 1 minute. The Mefarshim explain an interesting concept. Why does it say that Yehuda said, take her out and burn? I mean, take her out. If it was a Beis Din of Yitzhak and Yaakov, so Yehuda is the youngest.
Yes.
So why is he the first one to talk, take her out and burn her? So the Mefarsh, some of this person explains over here, there's a din in the Gemara, in Sanhedrin, that Bedin in the Farsh is Peschin Minatzad. By capital punishment cases, you started from the youngest judge. Why? The smallest Beis Din to give capital punishment, and again, this is before Matan Torah. After Matan Torah, the smallest court that can give capital punishment is a court of 23. That is the smallest court. They had courts of 3, they had courts of 11, they had courts of 23, they had different numbers of courts. The Supreme Court, the big Beis Din in the Beis HaMikdash, was 71. But the minimal size of a Beis Din to give capital punishment was a Beis Din of 23. Now the din is, you have to hear everybody's opinion of what they think, and then you go by the majority of opinion. And this is a unique din. You don't go by brains, you go by numbers. Okay? If 10 people who were smarter said innocent, and 13 who were not so smart said guilty, even though the 10 were smarter than the 13, you still go by numbers. Okay? That is why the Gemara says, we know whenever there was an argument between Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai, between the school of Hillel and the school of Shammai, the halacha is like Beis Hillel. Why was the halacha like Beis Hillel? So the Gemara says, because they had more students. So they had the majority of opinions. Even though the Gemara says Beis Shammai were smarter than Beis Hillel, they were smarter people, because it's very simple. Beis Shammai only let in, Beis Shammai is a tough guy, right? Tough person. He only let in great caliber people. Hillel was more of a kind nature, he let everybody in. So Shammai's students were much greater than Hillel's students. So they were smarter. Nevertheless, the Torah says you go by the majority of opinion. Therefore, in order to have a fair trial, you don't want anybody, any one of the judges, to be influenced by another judge. Now, if you started from the greatest judge, from the number one person, and he said his opinion, the younger judges are going to be intimidated by that opinion, and they might agree with him, even though they personally don't agree, or wouldn't agree. But they're going to say, well, if he said it, and he's better and holier and smarter, so he must be right. So the Gemara says, by capital punishment, they started from the youngest up. The older people, the smarter people, couldn't care less what the lesser people said, right? I mean, they're smarter and greater. They're not going to care what the younger ones say. But then you have everybody's opinion. Okay? This is the halacha of Peschin Minatzad. You start from the youngest. Then you get everybody's opinion. Okay? By the way, this is one of the proofs, what we said before about Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai, that's one of the proofs that if it's a choice between quantity and quality, quantity outweighs quality. Because Beis Hillel had more quantity. Beis Shammai had more quality. So Beis Shammai was more in quality. Beis Hillel was more in numbers and quantity. But halacha is quantity outweighs quality.
Also because he's her father-in-law, so he was...
But right now nobody knew who anybody is.
But didn't they sit them
out? Yeah, I mean, but I'm saying, you're right. They didn't know with whom she was pregnant.
I know, but he is the one who feels the first right to judge her because he's the father-in-law.
Doesn't know that.
No, it doesn't say, but I'm thinking this is why he's saying...
Now... Now, one second. The Mefarshim over here say another thing. Why does the Torah say Yehuda said it?
Mm-hmm.
Because the truth is, it was a mistake to burn her. She wasn't doomed to burn. Because if she was pregnant from Yehuda like she was, then she didn't deserve to die. Right? Now, if Yehuda says burn her, that's really wrong. Not according to halacha. But in the reality of it, realistically, it was wrong. So they didn't want to put it onto Yitzchak's fault and Yaakov's fault, because they were b'chal innocent in the whole story. Yehuda had some guilt over here. So they put this erroneous decision on him. Even though, again, halachically, it wasn't an erroneous decision. Because Allah said she should be burnt. We'll soon see why she should be burnt. I mean, that's not the normal punishment, to be burnt. But Rashi explains, other Mefarshim explain why she should get burnt. But it was factually an erroneous decision.
So if Yehuda had nothing to do with this, she would have died.
Yeah.
It was not Yehuda.
Yeah, if it was a guy in the street. Even though the truth is it would be questionable, because the question was she really married to Aaron Einan? And that's a question in the commentaries, because they never consummated the marriage. It was before Matan Torah. So the question was, is it a legal marriage or not? In fact, when Yehuda met her, and Yehuda asked her all these questions, do you believe in God? Yes. Are you married?
No.
Right? If she was bound for Shayla, so some of us should learn that she was talking never married even to Aaron Einan.
Because she didn't have...
Because he never consummated the marriage.
Mm-hmm.
They were Doshmi Bifnim Vizayim Mibachutz. They never... But that's all Mechaikas. If they did, if they didn't, if they B'chal had be, it didn't have be. I mean, there's all various different opinions. So anyway, so Yehuda said, take her out and burn her. Now, why should she be burnt? So Rashi says that from this person of Ephraim Mikushaw, Rashi says in his name, she was the daughter of Shem, of Nayach's son Shem. Now, there's a din that a Bas Kayan, if she commits adultery, she gets burnt. There's a unique din. Everybody else gets choking. Chenek, a Bas Kohen, the daughter of a Kohen who commits adultery, she gets burnt. That's the Torah says. Now Shem, if you remember before in Lech Lecha, was Malki Tzedek, for who Kohen Lakel Elyon, and Malki Tzedek was a Kohen. So Shem was a Kohen. At least in those days he was a Kohen. So if his daughter committed adultery, so then she is a Bas Kohen, and she should get burnt.
But this Kehuna was taken from him and given to Avraham.
But at the time she was born, she was still at the din of a Bas Kohen.
Oh.
Now,
question.
You what?
Were there any witnesses?
Who?
To what?
To the adultery. You know that she need witnesses?
It's a good point, but the proof of it was that she was pregnant.
They can't know it's...
How?
And there are no husbands. They're dead.
As a rule, if a woman comes and says, I committed adultery, she's not believed.
Right.
If a woman says to her husband, I committed adultery, she is not believed.
Mm-hmm.
Because a person is not believed to say that he did a sin. For instance, if somebody eats chazer, okay, in the time of the Beis Hamikdash, you ate pig and you were warned by two witnesses, you'd get 39 lashes, right? The guy comes to Beis Din and says, hey Beis Din, guess what? I ate pig. Give me lashes. Beis Din says, go home, have a nice day. Because a person is not believed to testify on himself that he did something wrong. Ein adam meisim misatzmei rasha. A person is not believed to make himself wicked. If a guy comes to court and says, I did adultery, you don't believe him.
Oh, so it's an anti-Christian...
you don't believe...
They confess. What is the vidui so? Do vidui to Hashem only?
First of all, the husband shouldn't believe. I mean, I had cases like this already. People call me that the wife committed adultery and the husband doesn't know about it, and she should tell him. Shouldn't she tell him? What should she do?
Okay.
But this week I had such a case.
And what is the answer?
So, she shouldn't tell him. Because if she tells him and he believes her, then she might be forbidden to stay married to him.
But if she did,
technically, she's not believed.
Forbidden?
Only if he knows about it.
Only what?
Only if he knows about it. That's what halacha is. Only if he knows about it.
Oh.
If witnesses came and said she did it. Anyway. Let's not get into these types of conversations.
Well, that's very interesting.
I know it's very interesting. Thank you.
So she really did it, and technically she can still stay with him?
If he doesn't know about it, or he doesn't believe her. And there are no witnesses.
Uh-huh.
Now, in this case of Tamar, right, even though she was the one that said, I'm pregnant, I mean, I committed adultery, but she, I mean, how else is she pregnant? Now, some of Farshim Taka learn like the Ramban disagrees with Rashi. Because Ramban says it's not adultery over here.
That's true.
All it is, she was a widow from two husbands, and she had to be Yibum, waiting for Yibum with the third son. You don't get capital punishment for that. You don't get capital punishment for that. So the Ramban argues with Rashi, it's a love.
Not like
it's a love. No. Until she's not married yet. The truth is, she's not allowed to get married until she does Yibum or Chalitza. But it's only a negative commandment. Not all adult, not all forbidden relations are capital punishment. If a Kohen marries a divorcee, who's not allowed to, it's not capital punishment. It's only a negative commandment. This is also a negative commandment. So the Ramban argues in Rashi, and the Ramban learns Yehuda didn't tell her to burn because she was a daughter of a Kohen who committed adultery, because the Ramban says for Znus, before Matan Torah, there was no adultery. So the fact that she had to wait for Yibum, first of all, still before Matan Torah, you don't get killed for that. So the Ramban learns that the burning was for a different reason.
For which reason?
The Ramban learns that the reason was not on legal grounds. But Yudah says, I'm such a prominent person, you embarrassed me, and publicly, you deserve to die.
This is the same deal like Bas Kohen.
No.
He embarrassed his father, and this is the reason of his birth.
And any person embarrasses the father.
But he is...
There's exactly a cause of Bas Kohen. It's nothing to do with the embarrassment.
But he is saying, a daughter of a priest is not liable to the death penalty.
No, he didn't say
that. That's the argument of Ramban and Rashi.
Uh-huh.
So in this case... Normally, a daughter of a Kohen who's married and commits adultery, she gets burnt.
Okay.
Over here, the Ramban asks in Rashi that here she wasn't a married woman.
Oh, because she's not married. That's
right.
Okay.
Right.
But if a woman, she's waiting for Yibum, she is doing adultery and she is pregnant, what is her punishment?
Tactically, nothing. But because Yehuda was such a prominent person, and it was an embarrassment to Yehuda, so Yehuda demanded she should get burnt.
But besides Yehuda, other case, it's nothing, no punishment, and the child will not be mamzer or something like this. Nothing.
If somebody else would have done it in Tamar's situation, it would have been forbidden alive, but no mamzerim.
After Matan Torah,
the kid's not a mamzer, also not.
After Matan Torah,
if a lady is waiting for Yibum, okay, or Chalitza, and she doesn't, she has relations with somebody, she becomes pregnant, the kid is not a mamzer.
And she, love it's,
no, Yibum is, if a guy dies without children, the brother has to marry, okay? So a woman whose husband died, and she has no children, she is not allowed to marry anybody else until she does the chalitza, you know, the shoe spitting process, or Yibum, and then the husband divorces or dies. What happens if this woman had relations with somebody beforehand? So the halacha is the kid would not be a mamzer. Mamzer is only for sins of capital punishment. Incest creates a mamzer. Any forbidden sexual relations that the Torah says you die for, you get killed for, that creates a mamzer. Most of the time. There are a few exceptions. Okay? That creates a mamzer. If a Kohen marries a divorcee who he's not allowed to marry, the kid's not a mamzer. He's not a Kohen, the kid, but he's not a mamzer. Even though it's a negative prohibition that a Kohen cannot marry such a woman, it's still not a mamzer. According to most opinions. I mean, Rabbi Kiva is a separate opinion. But according to most opinions, and that's the halacha, a kid is not a mamzer on a lav, only if it's a brother and a sister, a nephew with an aunt. I mean, all those are two sisters. That you know.
A married woman who commits adultery, and she gets pregnant, he's not a mamzer?
Yes.
Oh, it is? Okay.
That's capital punishment.
Okay.
Any time of capital punishment, the child is a mamzer.
While we are in the subject, what about a couple that are not married and they have a child? Then they go married. Later on,
nothing.
Nothing. No problem.
I didn't say it's no problem. It's not the. No.
No.
If a guy marries, I mean, if a Jewish woman married, if a Jewish married woman has relations with a non-Jew, I'm not saying she should, but if a married Jewish woman has relations with a guy and becomes pregnant, the kid's also not a mamzer.
Yeah.
If a Jew had relations with her and made her pregnant, the kid's a mamzer. And I always tell over the classic shul story. There's a case here in the shul. There was a guy that used to start coming to the many, many years ago. He used to start coming to the shul, and he started becoming religious, and he lived all the way up in the hills in a big house overlooking, you know, the whole thing over there. And they wanted to speak to him a few times. Learned a little bit with him once or twice. And in the middle, he's telling me, he's married to his wife with a kid. And in the middle, he tells me his life story. And basically says, well, you know, my mother wasn't Jewish. He comes from, his last name was a very prominent rabbinic Jewish family. And his father was a black sheep who married a non-Jewish woman, and he was born, so he basically wasn't Jewish. The end of the story was, not the end of the story, I told him, thank God you're a goy. I told him, thank God you're a goy. Why? The wife he was married to, this is a true story, the wife he was married in Morocco by a very religious rabbi. And her husband was a wife beater. And she finally ran away from the husband in Morocco.
Without a get.
She just ran away from him. And she went to France. And she met this guy in France and they got married. And they had a kid.
Wow, if it was a Jew.
And she never had a get. And the wedding was a kosher wedding. The first wedding. So I said to him, thank God you're a guy. Because if you'd be a Jew, your kid would be a mamzer. She's a married woman that you're living with. Right?
Yeah.
The problem was, he wanted to go through conversion. But he can't convert, because if she doesn't have a get from her first husband, how can he marry her? And the problem was, the first husband refused to give her a get in Morocco. So it was a catch 22 situation. So I said to him, meanwhile, you stay a guy.
You come to my shul.
You stay a guy. He came to shul every Shabbos. And you know something? Nobody in the shul, besides me, knew the story. And I had a problem once, not on Shabbos. One time, for Mincha during the week, he was number 10. And he came already at the time for davening. And I realized we don't have a minion, but nobody else knew that we don't have a minion except me. And the guy's looking at the watch, he said, okay, let's go. You know, one of these loudmouth. So, okay, let's go. We have a minion. I said, no, I'm waiting for somebody. Anyway, I'm waiting for somebody. Anyway, I'm waiting. God was kind to me. 3 minutes later, I'm waiting outside looking for. God made a tenth guy come. But this guy that said to me, let's go, wasn't a fool. He says, that guy's not Jewish, huh? He knew right, he understood right away that it wasn't I was waiting for somebody. He understood, and everybody else in shul he knew. So obviously he understood. The end of the story was that the husband finally gave his wife a get. They beat him up with power, with political power, whatever it was in Morocco. The guy gave his wife a get, and he converted and got married.
What'd you do for calling up to the Torah by Elias?
He didn't.
He didn't ever call?
Never.
What if, okay, in that case...
He knew that I couldn't. What?
With the minion? What if the guy didn't come? What would you have done?
You called someone.
You'll find something.
God was kind to me.
No, one second, what would be the alternative?
I couldn't make a minion with a guy.
But
what?
You cannot tell the story. Okay?
You can't tell the story if you leave. For instance, oh, I get emergency. Okay.
But the guy used to wear tzitzis out. I mean, you should have seen the scene. He was wearing his tzitzis out.
So take that to the conclusion. What would have happened?
I wouldn't have been able to have a minion.
And then people were going to ask why.
I would have to figure out what to do then. But the bottom line, could we have a minion? You can't have a minion with a guy. You can't have a minion with a guy.
Wow.
And eventually he moved out. He moved away. It happened. They moved away to Europe, and over there all the things happened.
What if somebody converts conservative?
We're not talking this.
If some woman is married, and she divorces her husband, can she marry his brother?
No.
If he goes to mikveh?
No.
And other question: this love is a woman, is a yibum, and the love, it's what, korban or lashes or what?
The love. Is Malchus. Okay. So anyway, so that technically, so the Ramban learns that you can't burn her for committing adultery because there's no adultery over here. So therefore, the Ramban learns that this is because that he wanted because of his prominence. Then they bring down the Balatunim, brings down from Rabbi Yehuda Chassid, who says Bacha, an interesting thing. It's a yuv, it's a sisar, it doesn't mean take her out and burn her. It's a yuv, it's a sisar, if was brand her. They used to brand the zainus.
Brandy.
Used to mark. So you said burn. That was the custom that they learned. That was the custom the old times used to brand them. People should know that they were.
Like slaves?
Whatever, yeah.
Cattle.
Okay. Now, he mutzeis, she was being taken out, and she was being taken out to be burnt. V'yishalcha al-chamiya, and she sent a message to her father-in-law by the ones that were taking her out. Lamer saying, and she said, I want you to say, lamer means say exactly what I'm telling you to say. What's he telling him to say? Le'isha shere le'loi. I am pregnant to the one that owns these things. Okay, that's the one I'm pregnant to. Vatayman, she said, and she pleaded. That's what I said. Vatayman, she said, Hakena, please, I beg you, identify. To whom belongs the seal, the strap, and the staff? Now, there's a lot to talk on this pasuk. The Medrash says, Baruch Hashem, the Medrash says that the Satan wanted Tamar to get burnt because she was pregnant
Mashiach.
With David and Malach Mashiach, you're right, all these things. Satan got rid of all these things, the ring, the staff, the Satan got rid of it. That's why she wasn't able to identify it until she's being taken out to burn. A miracle happened and Hashem gave it back to her.
Oh.
To save the children.
And where she lived.
That's why it says a miracle happened, she got it back.
Oh.
So that's why it says when she's being taken out to be burnt, that's when she said, she should have said it right away. Why is she waiting to be taken out to burn? So the Medrash said, because Takana Sutton came and took everything away.
Maybe she didn't know.
No.
She knew?
She knew. Mm-hmm. Because the whole thing was to show that it came from Yehuda.
The mystery.
not a mystery. It's the God mystery of the Mashiach story.
If she will only tell this, and he would have confess that this is right. It's
how would she prove it?
She has to prove it.
Nobody knows that this happened with Yehuda, and if she tells,
she's going to come along and say, "Yeah, I'm pregnant from you." Why should he believe
her? Yeah, she tells the story. It was a woman that's sitting there in a place,
it's not the valid.
And you have Abdullah, you have a witness.
That ain't going to work.
You have a witness.
But there's another thing over here. Why Taka didn't Thomas say, "I'm pregnant from you"?
She didn't want to
embarrass.
But not really.
But let me discuss that first. Mm-hmm. The Gemara learns out from in the Gemara Seita, the Gemara learns out from here a phenomenal concept. Tamar could have said to Yehuda, "Hey Boychik, you know, I'm pregnant from you." Right? If Yehuda would have ignored this, if Yehuda wouldn't say, "Yeah, it's from me," Yehuda could have been kept quiet. After all, he would have gotten embarrassed by admitting, yeah? Yehuda could have kept quiet and let it burn. Yeah? The Gemara says it's better to be willing to throw yourself into a burning fire and get burnt. Tamar was willing to get burnt rather than embarrass Yehuda publicly. That means embarrassing somebody publicly is so bad that Tamar, and this is the lesson from the story, Tamar is willing to get burnt at the stake not to embarrass Yehuda by telling him, "Hey, I'm pregnant from you." Tasis in the Gemara Seita asks a very interesting question. From this concept, we see that if it's a question of embarrassing somebody publicly or giving up your life, you have to give up your life. So Tasis says, but there's only three sins you have to do that for: idolatry, adultery, and murder. This is embarrassing somebody publicly. So Tasis asks, the Gemara says, we know only three sins you have to give up your life for. If somebody says, "Bow down to an idol, I'll kill you." Or somebody comes over to a man and says, "Commit adultery, I'll kill you." Or somebody says, "Kill somebody else, I'll kill you." In all these cases, you have to give up your life. But everything else, not. And here we see there's a fourth thing. So Tasis answers, yes, it's a fourth thing. The reason why the Gemara doesn't mention it in the three, because this sin of not embarrassing somebody publicly does not say clearly anywhere in Chumash. Idolatry, it says clearly. Adultery, it says clearly. Murder, it says all these things you're not allowed to do. So those three sins, the Gemara says, those are three sins the Torah mentions clearly you have to give up your life for. Because the Torah says clearly they're sins. Embarrassing somebody publicly doesn't say anywhere in the Torah you're not allowed to. But from this story we learn out that it's so bad to embarrass somebody publicly, it's worth to throw yourself into a fire and get killed rather than embarrass somebody publicly.
Does it matter Jewish or non-Jewish?
The expression of the Gemara is Malbim Pnei Chaveri of your friend, which would imply Jews. If it applies to non-Jews or not, I don't know. But the expression of the Gemara itself is Malbim Pnei Chaveri. Chaver is a friend, which replies halachically to a Jew.
See, that's like the case that you had. So had to do the minion or embarrass the guy.
The guy was a guy.
Yeah,
the guy was a guy. But still, that doesn't mean you can make a minion out of it.
If the guy was a guy, he might not get it.
He might not get it. Huh? But how can you make a minion? Let me ask you a question. If you come to somebody's house that doesn't keep kosher, and they serve you food,
can you eat?
Are you allowed to eat it not to embarrass the host? Hello?
This is not public embarrassment.
What happens if there's 10 people at the table and they offer you tray for food, and if you don't eat it, you're going to embarrass your host, which is embarrassing somebody publicly? Are you allowed to?
But you can tell the story, I'm full, I'm milky, I'm fleshy, and this.
Doctor told me don't eat.
Doctor told me don't eat.
There's a difference between...
You might be able to get out of that.
There's another difference. Hello? There's another difference here.
It depends the level.
There's a difference between active embarrassment or passive embarrassment. Now, Tamar, if she said, "I'm pregnant from you," that's active embarrassment. That's an act of embarrassment. Not eating is not an act of embarrassment. It's by not eating, by, it's passive. It's not the same level of embarrassment. A person is not obligated to give up his life for passive embarrassing somebody. So, not making a minyan is not actively embarrassing the guy. It's passively embarrassing the guy, which is also different. Just as, while we're on the topic that she says is very interesting, when it comes to adultery, there's also a difference between a man and a woman. That's why I said, if somebody comes over to a man and says, commit adultery or so I'll kill you. God forbid, if a married woman is raped by a man, she doesn't have to give up her life, because she has a passive role in the sexual act rather than an active role. The man is active, so he has an obligation to give up his life. If a woman willingly does a sexual act, so that's an active part. That's how the Gemara asks, how did Esther live with Ahasuerus? It was a guy. The answer is, the Gemara says, because she was passive, not active. She didn't want. What?
And if you, as a rabbi, you hear, it's a hearsay confidential from your client or from your person, like me, and it's like, I hear people telling me things. Am I a witness, or I'm just a stupid hearing and passive, active?
Don't get me started with the women, if they are kosher witnesses or not.
No. I didn't mean that. I could be a man. Like, if a person admits to you...
No, that's not the testimony. Testimony is when you see the act.
So you, as a rabbi, if someone
will
find himself to you, and you know this person is committing adultery, for example.
You know what's his name?
All the details. What do
what's
you do?
The
you
big law? Yeah. Huh?
The knife. The
no. What's the big
lawyer?
Dershowitz, no? Mm. Alan Dershowitz was the one speaking at the law convention, and he was speaking. He says the classical ethical example that they teach at the beginning of law school. Okay, the first ethical question for lawyers is, there's a guy sitting on death row for murder.
Mm-hmm.
There's a guy sitting on death row for murder. And somebody comes over to a priest and confesses to the priest, I want you to know that that guy on death row is innocent. And the priest says to the guy, how do you know he's innocent? He says, because I did it. Now, should the priest tell the authorities? Now, the problem is this confidentiality.
Mm-hmm.
This client confidentiality. So technically, the priest has no... He's not allowed to tell the authorities what this guy told him in privacy.
Depends on cases.
But the question is, now an innocent guy is going to die.
Exactly. You can break it.
See, that's only good in the secular courts. In Torah law, the whole thing doesn't make sense. Because if a guy comes and says, I killed somebody, you don't believe him.
No, there's reasonable doubt.
Yes.
But Beis Din would never put the guy in death row to begin with.
Because there are no witnesses.
If there was any there had to be reason. There's no reasonable... Reasonable doubt, by the way, is not enough to kill somebody in Torah law. It's not beyond any reasonable doubt. It has to be definite knowing that this guy did it. And he was warned.
By two witnesses.
So it's not the concept beyond any reasonable doubt. That's also not good enough in Torah law. In Torah law, the two witnesses had to see the guy, they had to warn him, and they saw him doing it anyway. And even then, the Beis Din made the witnesses so crazy, they ended up not killing the guy. Really, did they kill the guy? What?
But Rabbi, with all due respect, not every crime has witnesses to it. That doesn't mean that the crime was not committed.
Correct, but...
The guy shouldn't be punished.
Correct. But according to Torah law, if there were no witnesses, there is no punishment.
That's everybody can be criminal.
Right. No punishment?
No. Criminal. Well, from God, yeah, but not courts. According to Torah law, I'll give you an example. If Moshe Rabbeinu and Aaron HaKohen, two brothers, yeah, witnessed, and they were the only witnesses of the murder, and they came to Beis Din to testify that A killed B, there's no killing of A. You know why? Moshe and Aaron, because they're brothers, are not kosher witnesses. So you don't have two witnesses. Is Moshe lying? No. Is Aaron lying? No. Yet Moshe and Aaron together, because they're brothers, cannot put somebody in the death chamber, in the death chair. Why? Because they're not kosher witnesses.
So,
according to Torah, it's very questionable. That question.
So a lot of people
is DNA.